The University Tower chimes ring in another session of Ask the Professor, the radio show on which you match wits with University of Detroit Mercy professors in an unrehearsed session of questions and answers. I'm your host, Matt Mayo, and let me please, please introduce to you our panel for today. Please. I'm on my knees begging, please. Professor Dave Chow from the College for Creative Studies.
Pleasure to be here, as always.
As always. You finished your vitamin water, so how does your brain feel?
I don't know. I'm missing my flame retardant right about now. So
somebody set Dave on fire, or try to, and see what happens.
Don't give my students ideas.
Oh, my gosh.
They will.
Just came in from our weekly, apparently now 2 o'clock, explosion that we're doing outside of the building for reasons that really disturb some of the faculty in our department.
But because Mark Benvenuto is a member of your department. Isn't well, that the explanation for
what
why
What is yeah. wrong with explosions
no,
on
There's
a
nothing
basis.
Wrong with them
no,
except
it's
for...
the primary explanation.
Yeah.
Cause and effect? No.
Actually, I heard these words spoken to me today by one of the students who was one of the instigators of getting this to be sort of a weekly thing.
I definitely
I wanted
know
to
mean.
Do it this way, and Dr. B said that it wasn't risky enough.
Hold on. So, Matt, are you going to have to put down like a helmet and a cup as a requirement in
oh,
your
I'm
class now,
you,
or
man,
what?
That would not protect
gonna
against.
Going to have to take out extra insurance
yeah,
for as long as Mark.
And now it's getting to the point where public safety is driving by. The students don't go hide the stuff or look alive. It's more like they're getting out of the car to come watch. The president walks by. He's like, "What's up with this? Oh, cool." You know.
Yeah. Public wow. safety is driving by a lot faster now.
About stuff. I am certain that interim dean Roy Finkenbein of the College of Liberal Arts and Education keeps way closer ties with his faculty.
We have many fewer explosions of a physical nature.
Oh, the train
show. Good. Okay.
We have so some of a moral
some
nature.
Verbal.
However, today was a very quiet day in the dean's office because I was reading through tenure and promotion dossiers
oh,
going
fantastic.
Blind.
Yeah.
You know, they're getting fatter every year. It's like I've got one faculty member that has three that are probably like, you know,
can't they just
five
write
inch
them on,
dossiers.
Can't they just write them on like $50 bills and just be done with?
Well, we had a
not a bad thought, actually.
We had a former faculty member that I've been told about that was here right before I came, and he went up for tenure and promotion, had two books. He wrote out a hand scrawled single page on a legal pad sheet, folded it, rubber banded it to his two books and turned that in as his as his tenure and promotion dossier.
Professor Evans.
Good afternoon.
From Chemistry and Biochemistry. We've been watching these explosions pretty much all academic year. They started back in September.
I've never seen anything like it. Mm-hmm. I know we had them on occasion in previous years, but this year is really, really frequent.
Yeah, well, not just that, but I also think there's always a method to the madness because Mark isn't insane. He just likes to see things explode. I feel
that
like is this
true.
Is a cover for getting
Blow
rid of several kilos of thermite. I mean, we can't have that much thermite in
We're
the
We're
going to
have extra storage space.
You'll be
yeah,
making
exactly.
your own before long.
Well, gee,
or he has some yeah, issues he's working out.
Yes, he's welding rails together to make his own whale woad.
Or he's trying to make everybody a souvenir because I've seen increasing numbers of thermite souvenirs.
That is true. And today, for the record, because I did not hear how it worked
they're
out.
They're not people.
They did have a mold that they're trying to pour the molten iron into to make things out of, make medallions out of. So we'll see how that worked.
We can do that in our school.
Very difficult to control molten iron at 5,700 degrees Celsius.
No,
we
can do it.
You know,
at CCS, we got a foundry.
Oh, yeah, you have a little foundry. Yeah.
Yeah, we can handle that.
The foundry and forge in the Benvenuto lab is an old Teflon frying pan on top of a hot plate. And I'm not joking.
The waffle iron just
not
can't
joking
handle it
at all. It's even got a little label on the side that says Foundry and Forge.
He does use kitchen appliances because when I moved into his lab, there were like blenders and like kitchen utensils and all sorts of things that really, I mean,
Hamilton
they weren't
Beach.
Like for a kitchenette within the lab. They were really for lab use.
Yes. Chemistry
Hamilton,
is fun
maybe?
With a pH.
Oster.
So what's going on in your lab, Professor Jason Roach of Communication Studies?
Well, we were thinking of doing our explosions weekly as well. But,
and
we do special effects on After Effects kinds of things.
Tell us about the show that you're doing, though, that you talked to me about.
Well, we're going to be producing a TV show in my television production class in which we interview various faculty or other members on campus and just talk about what's going on. So,
very cool.
Maybe we can get some footage of these cool explosions and
from afar.
Bringing a bigger audience.
I'm sure everybody is invited.
Yes.
Nice. Everybody, including public safety.
The thermite reaction is a way that we can use powdered aluminum and rust if we get it burning hot enough, as in magnesium metal burning hot enough, which is so bright you can't look at it or you lose your eyesight. You can get it to basically do reverse reduction oxidation, and it generates spontaneously a giant amount of molten iron. They used to do the reaction over the rails on the railroad to fuse the rails together, but it also sprays molten iron at 5,700 degrees Celsius like a fountain.
Toasty.
So what they've been doing is they've been rigging apparatus with clay, basically, is the only thing that won't, you know, even though it does get hot, and multiple levels of clay potting pots, like you would for plants, and it will sort of sloot through the middle hole, and they get it going down like it's a little waterfall, and they can get three reactions going at once, which is essentially not just three times more deadly. Professor Chuck Hokett of Information Technology Services.
Very good. I guess I got my lesson right there. Thank you, Matt.
Yes. Clay wants
what day
no
are you doing these, so I make
you have to be very, very careful.
Fridays?
2 o'clock.
2 o'clock.
Right before we get here.
Yeah. I'm hoping this will not be fused in the future with Hot Dog Tuesday.
Yeah. It could be. We're going to cook all the hot dogs in 10 seconds.
And then blow them up.
Exactly.
There was pork everywhere, man.
Yeah. I don't know what you make of this, Professor Beth Oljar of philosophy, but tell us.
I am speechless.
Okay.
If an explosion happened outside the chemistry building and no one was there to watch it, would it really happen? She could answer that.
I can answer that, actually.
I think the answer is yes, isn't it?
Depends on what you mean by seeing.
You know, I mean, what,
the standard question about, you know, the tree in the forest and doesn't make a sound. Yes, if by sound you mean simply the movement of air, then that occurs. If by sound you mean
received
as heard by us, our subjective sensation, then
That's right. Well, I'll tell you what, this is a program where you can send us questions regarding anything, epistemology. Pissed off ology, if you want to.
And thermite.
Yeah, I'm going to tell my best friend, whose area of specialization is epistemology, that's what
wonderful.
It now means.
Tell him that there's an organic chemistry professor who lectures about constructivism every single day.
It's a her, actually.
Oh, wonderful. I'm sorry. I apologize for my bias. You can reach us in a number of ways. You can email us at atp@udmercy.edu. You can reach us on the web at udmercy.edu/ATP or at facebook.com/UDMATP. You can fax the profs at 313-993-1166 or send the questions USPS to the College of Liberal Arts and Education, University of Detroit Mercy, 4001 West McNichols Road, Detroit, Michigan, 48221-3038. Last time we were together, we were looking at some questions from Beverly Hollis of Redmond, Washington. They were all over the map, and they were wonderful. And we're going to take off with, what are Mulefoot, British Lop, Saddleback, and Tokyo X?
These are types of something?
They are types of something.
Can you repeat that list again?
Yeah.
Mulefoot, British Lop, Saddleback, Tokyo X. Sounds pretty deadly.
A thermite reaction.
It's not a
vegetable?
An herb that's illegal?
No. We're talking about explosions.
Only illegal in some
medicinal
states.
Purposes.
Yeah. Oh, we're talking about explosions. Kinds of explosives?
And then Dean Finkenbeid said something about, I wonder if this will come across, you know, Hot Dog Tuesday. Then I mentioned something about a hot dog exploding. And then you said,
pork.
What?
Oh, they're kind of pigs.
They're kind of pigs. Yes.
Oh, I was thinking tomatoes or something like that. Okay.
My longest explanation.
Well, if you'd said Berkshire, I might have. No,
or potbelly. Potbelly pig.
Or pork.
Nobody's
or delicious.
That's all, folks.
Why is the city of Boise, also known as 35108? It's its nickname, actually. I'm not joking about
code,
this.
35108. No, it can't be. That's too far west.
Too far west.
That would make, however, for an interesting television program.
Altitude.
Boise, 35128. 108, pardon me. For all of our Idaho listeners.
Sounds pretty high for altitude.
Yeah, it's a little high. But we don't know the units.
Well, there's no units given.
Oh, no units needed. Oh, It's not population. No, it can't be.
Boy, yeah, it can't be zip codes because Oregon's and Washington start with nine.
We're fours. So.
Yeah. We're simple people in Detroit. We just call ourselves the D, and it pretty much covers everything. We know Dallas tried to get in on that. They call themselves Big D, but whatever.
No,
you know.
Oh, please.
No.
What do you guys think? Fish, right,
Texas can secede.
Oh, what was the number again?
35108.
It's close to the... my home phone number when I was a kid. I'm not kidding. 3508 was Kenwood. The last four. Were the last
latitude,
four
longitude.
No. Professor Chow came closest, and all he did was a doodle fake on the table. If you put it into a calculator upside down, it spells Boise.
Oh, that's awesome.
That is
like
awesome. Shell oil. My dad used to do that when I was a kid.
Yes, exactly. What technically are the high seas?
It's a drink, isn't it?
Are you talking about on a piano? Not the high C on a piano.
You want
the
frequent
distance from land, right?
It's a certain distance from land. Or the high, like we're out on the high seas, but what
was
is
it
that
like
distance?
International waters? Yeah. Was it 3 miles out or something like that?
Oh, actually, it's I don't be. Know because they're giving me this in nautical miles, which I never am able to convert easily.
So, in other words, beyond national boundaries.
Exactly. Yeah. 12 nautical miles is the high seas, is what it says.
Okay. Nice.
Where you can, at least according to The Simpsons, have a boxing match between a horse and a man. Because there are
my
no
casino
rules anymore. And, just for kicks, you can rebroadcast Major League Baseball without express written consent, but with implied verbal consent. Not funny at all. Who are Who are the only two presidents who died within the walls of the White House?
Career-wise or physically?
Harrison.
Oh my, it's a lot longer than this
yeah,
is
probably
too.
Would be Harrison.
Harrison Tyler.
Yes. Harrison and not Tyler.
Taylor.
Taylor. Taft. Yes. Taylor. Harrison
Mr.
and
Gastro.
Taylor.
What was it?
The cucumbers?
Problems,
yeah. That was what?
Well, there's still the debate over whether somebody took him out. But
What city had the very first public aquarium? They called it the Fish House. It was simpler times in 1853.
Philadelphia?
San Francisco?
Boston.
San Francisco?
No. It was not American.
Oh.
Not American for a public aquarium.
London.
London Zoo. Yep. Okay. The London Zoo.
The Fish House?
Fish House. Make it easy. Just make it easy. What are we going to call it?
Actually.
White House is what we'll call it. In 2011, what dubious record did Rivka Stănescu of Romania achieve?
Tenure.
Oh. quite dubious.
Is this an Olympic record?
I remember hearing about this. It sort of fits more into the Guinness sort of interesting sort of thing. It has something to do with
a certain amount of objects.
Beer pong or something.
Maybe
beer pong.
Cigarettes.
There was a hilarious South Park episode, though, about a record.
That's right.
A world record.
That's right.
Kendra knows. Looking at her,
definitely
I
know it.
South Park.
No, this is something that, if things go down the line of social norms, I may not experience until I reach the age of 55 or 60. What did Rivka do? She became the world's youngest grandmother at the age of 25.
25?
Whoa.
That's pretty brutal.
25?
Not just the record holder, but the record.
I don't know if we have enough historical data to really grant that.
Well, in the modern era, we can make it true. And I'll finish the question by saying what Jeff would say if he was here. Do the math. Okay.
25?
25.
I was barely sentient.
What car model is the best-selling Hot Wheels toy car?
Mustang?
Not the Mustang.
Come here.
But go for
Corvette.
Your
Corvette.
The Corvette. Oh. Yep. Corvette. How many lunar rovers has the United States of America left on the moon? There's
three?
A certain number of them. It's three, yeah. Right on.
Wow.
Right on.
And we do own the moon, right?
We do own
the
moon. We can do whatever we want with the moon. The moon belongs to America.
And Howard and Raj have bounced laser beams off of them.
Oh, yeah, that's right. So did the Mythbusters. That was fun. What brand of cigarette was the last to have an ad that appeared on television?
Marlboro?
Winston?
No.
Camel?
Pall Mall.
Marlboro?
Keep going.
We're going to give them free advertising.
Chesterfield.
Virginia Slims is what I have here. Oh, wow. They were alive with pleasure.
No. That wasn't Virginia Slims.
Oh, wasn't? That was a different one?
Virginia Slims was You've Come a Long Way, Baby.
We've
Come a Long Way, Baby.
That's right. If only I remembered my ads for cigarettes better.
We can now get lung cancer at the same rate as men. Yeah.
It's only fair.
Oh, my gosh. Let's take a break while I reorient my advertising memory.
It's an Ask the Professor flashback.
1995.
Thank you.
You're After welcome. Whom are Baby Ruth candy bars named?
President Kidd's wife. No. The president's
Kid.
Kid, that's right. Grover Cleveland's daughter. Yeah. Ruth. Yeah.
Was that an illegitimate?
So yes. She's the one that, you know.
Is that where's my pa?
Gone to the White House.
That's right.
No, that was the Kennedy years.
No, that was Grover Cleveland. Okay. Mayor of Buffalo. Hey.
But now, aren't the ads trying to make some connection between Babe Ruth and...
Because they're written by idiots.
Oh,
because
they don't know.
That's right. They're stupid.
Oh, they're not like intentionally misleading.
No,
they just don't know.
Stupid people. Oh. Uneducated,
what?
Stupid
people.
People
in advertisement are stupid, Edwin? Is that
yes.
What you're trying to
Edwin is leaving out the crucial point. They're uneducated. They're stupid, highly paid people.
That's
just
right.
They are.
Paid.
But we're not bitter, okay. I'll say that.
No, not us.
We're too big for that.
We're generous of spirit.
We are back with some absolutely fantastic questions we're enjoying very, very much from Beverly Hollis of Redmond, Washington.
They're awesome, Beverly.
Home of Nintendo.
Home of Nintendo?
No. Nintendo's in Redmond, isn't it?
Microsoft
is there, but I think Nintendo's there too.
There's a bunch of them out there.
Yeah. What film had its star appear on screen after the closing credits to address the audience, "You're still here? It's
Ferris
over.
Bueller's Day Off.
Go home. Ferris Bueller's Day Off." Absolutely. Was Matt, what's his name?
Matthew Broderick.
Broderick, star? I'm just kidding, I'm being too smart. At the time, maybe. What animal rights activist / actress once said, "All creatures must learn to coexist. That's why the brown bear and the field mouse share their lives in harmony. Of course, they can't mate or the mice would explode."
Betty White.
Betty White. Betty White, right on.
No, I just guessed.
The funniest person.
Elephant, potbelly pig.
I know. Close enough. Cue the chef song when an elephant makes love to
a pig.
You know.
Nobody's splicing my Fluffy.
Excuse me.
Hilarious.
Which Muppet displays all five of his fingers, as opposed to the others that only have four?
Swedish Chef.
No.
Fozzie.
No, and you're thinking classical Muppet, as in Muppet Show, when you should think Muppet
Ralph,
tributary.
Ralph, the guitar player, the dog?
From Sesame Street, actually.
Oh. Mm. Oscar?
No.
The Count.
No.
Big Bird.
You'd think the Count with counting on his fingers.
He's
not Elmo.
Bert, Ernie.
Can't be Elmo.
Bert, Ernie.
Hey,
Bert.
Cookie Monster.
Cookie Monster is what it says.
He has to get cookies, so the fingers, the dexterity can be crucial.
That makes a good point.
But the Swedish Chef has literally got hands.
He's got hands in there.
Not even gloved hands.
Yeah.
What do you mean, why me, Bert?
If you want to waste 45 seconds of your life, you can look up on YouTube a dubbed version of the Batman movies where everything is the same, except for whenever Christian Bale opens his mouth, it's the original Cookie Monster voice going, "Cookie." That's the only thing that's different about it, and it fits perfectly.
It'd be funnier if it was the Swedish Chef, though. And you can do a great Swedish Chef.
Maybe. What nation... has the second most McDonald's per capita. This would be behind the U.S. as number one. Who's number two?
Japan.
Nope. But you got the right idea.
China.
Not China. France. Too many people
Singapore?
In China to make
England?
The ratio work. Yeah.
India. No, that's a lot of people too.
Italy.
They call themselves Kiwis.
New Zealand.
Yeah. Yes, absolutely.
They serve sheep burgers, right?
Peter Jackson, Hobbit burgers or something.
Mm-hmm.
What kind of wood are most Jenga games made from? That's a fantastic question. I would have never known how to answer this.
Like cedar?
Pine?
No.
Pine?
Not pine.
No, it's a heart.
Does that include giant Jenga game?
I
watch it too much. Big Bang Theory.
I don't know if this is a tree that we have very common in the state of Michigan, so we may not think about it, but I could be wrong.
Not
balsa.
But there's your balsams. Oak,
No, it says alder is what it is here. Not very common. It's very hard wood, obviously, if you're going to... Well, usually it ended up at our house with people flinging the pieces at each other.
Safety glasses.
Yeah. Safety glasses.
Explosions.
Yeah. In what country did birthday candles originate?
Italy.
No.
England.
But it is European.
Germany?
Germany is what it says here. That's kind of interesting.
Well, they first elect Christmas trees.
That's true. They are some candles all over the tree. I have no idea why Germany still exists.
I can't think of a smarter thing than putting candles
on a tree.
What could go wrong?
Indoors.
Yeah. Like explosions at 2 o'clock.
The only thing more dangerous is Darren McGavin's electrician skills in Christmas Story.
What was the first U.S. city that hosted the Summer Olympics? The year was 1904.
L.A.?
Salt Lake?
No.
San Francisco?
Gateway to the West.
St. Louis.
Oh, because, yeah, it was the same year as the
World's Fair?
World's Fair, yeah.
Okay. Those things are gone the way of the dodo, aren't they? What movie features fictional Big Kahuna Burgers?
Pulp Fiction.
Yes, absolutely. Also discussion of several other kinds of burgers, like a Royale with cheese.
That's right. Big Mac.
Yep. What city is... Oh, my. This is quite odd. What city is curiously nicknamed Pittsburgh of the West?
St. Louis?
No.
Cleveland.
It is not Cleveland.
Denver.
It is a city in the state of Indiana.
Muncie.
No, I was almost about to say this is where Larry Bird is from, but he's from French Lick, right?
Yes. So. The hick from French Lick.
Yep. Terre Haute is the Pittsburgh of the West.
Do they have a steel production there?
Like Muncie. That's in the same class as Muncie.
Awarded title.
Yeah, and we're the Paris of the Midwest.
I don't know what to say about that. Right. Yeah, we're the Paris of the West because
there
of the Art Deco, right?
So we lost on that.
And you know what? Cannot have even possibly imagined a better transition. Dear professors, a set of questions from Paris, where the mint is called the Money Hotel. In honor of the late, great $1 trillion platinum coin, I've coined some questions about coins.
I thought it was 3 trillion.
Sure.
There are 20 questions with 15 correct being a passing grade. We'd like you to hold the line here. Mark Neymark, our expatriate American in Paris, with some questions about coins. He's coined some questions about coins. Here we go. Coins are stamped on a disc of metal. What is that disc called before it's stamped?
Worthless.
A blank?
It's called a blank. At the U.S. Mint, blanks are punched from coiled strips of metal about 13 inches by 1,500 feet in a blanking press. The leftover webbing is chopped up and recycled. Very interesting.
That is.
What happens when a blank gets upset?
Can we say that on the air?
It fills in the blank.
This is going to get out of hand, isn't it? What happens when a blank gets upset?
It becomes unusable.
No.
Studies epistemology.
No. Suddenly, it's turning into the match game. I'm Gene Rayburn. What happens when a blank gets upset? Well, no, blanks go through an upsetting mill. It does something to them.
Melts.
Turns them over.
Hardens them?
Nope.
Oh, it shines glasses.
Nope. It's kind of old school. There's very little chemistry that goes on. I've seen this with my own eyes. I'll bring up my colleague, Mark Benvenuto, again. He's a gigantic numismatist.
He gets blown up.
He's a huge numismatist. He's been collecting coins his whole life, and he does coin analysis as part of his research. We had to go for the Philadelphia ACS meeting to the printing joint there, you know, the mint downtown. And it's fascinating. All they really do is press the metal and put them into bags and take them away. They don't do anything more specific than that. The upsetting mill puts the ridges on the edges of some of the coins.
Wow.
So your quarter has a ridge so you can feel it in your pocket.
Mm-hmm.
And that's
also
what
to prevent
the
people from
does.
Shaving them down, too.
But they don't melt anything there. They just press them. That's it.
Hmm.
What is the technical term for the stamping of a blank into a coin?
Emboss? Deboss?
Nope.
Pressing?
Nope.
Marking?
Something we're hoping that Justin Verlander is going to be able to
striking.
Do a lot this year. It strikes. Yes. Hmm. You strike the coin is what it is. What is seigniorage?
It's delicious with tartar sauce.
Oh. Seigniorage. Seignorage. Seigniorage. Wow. I've heard of this concept before, but I never heard the term applied to it.
To a coin.
It's all about coins.
Spending, counting,
spinning.
Trying to think of a way to bring this up. He says
the amount that it's worth.
Ah,
the
very close. This is what made the $1 trillion coin a viable solution, according to its proponents. It's the difference between the cost of producing the object that has a face value.
Okay.
So
like
there's
pennies,
a philosophical.
Yeah, pennies being worth like 3 cents
or
whatever.
To make versus.
Exactly.
Okay, gotcha. Okay.
This is the major argument, I believe. Seigniorage would be the major argument to get rid of pennies. Because it's just costing us too much money, right? Pretty interesting stuff.
And most of them are not in circulation. This actually came up on an episode of The West Wing.
Oh, did it?
Yeah.
They're in a pot on top of my nightstand.
Yeah.
In a similar vein, why does the U.S. government store over $1 billion in its own coinage?
We're greedy. Like
reserves?
Will they change? Reserves? Oh, no. Are these the dollar
parking
coins
meters?
That no one uses?
Interesting. Until recently, Professor Chow, Congress required the Mint produce a given amount of Sacagawea and U.S. presidential dollar coins each year, despite the fact that we don't use them. So the coins continue to pile up as banks return them to the Federal Reserve. That is $1 billion. That is a reasonable chunk.
Did they stop making the Susan B.
Can we solve,
Anthony
coins? Can we solve the deficit?
They didn't take off as well either.
I think they need to do that a little more.
It just never caught on. And they said it was going to be at every vending machine, which would have made sense, but then it never was.
No, Coca-Cola. Vending machines, we'd have them.
Coca-Cola and Pepsi put up a big stink about it.
Yeah.
Because they would have to retrofit all the machines to accept it.
Gosh.
Hoo.
Yeah, I know.
You know?
And now they accept credit cards.
Yeah, with an extra fee. Yep.
Except for that one down the hallway that
is broke.
Is broken, yes.
Broken.
The one I want to
take my money.
Here's another interesting philosophical twist to coinage. Why did the U.S. Mint stop allowing people to buy coins using a credit card? You think about it for just a minute. It's going to be a couple logical steps, but it does make sense. It was completely ended in 2011. You are not allowed to do this anymore. This is downright Ponzi scheme. Are you ready? People would use frequent flyer credit cards to purchase coins, earning them frequent flyer miles. Then they would deposit the coins in their bank, recovering the value of the purchase while retaining the miles. This meant the coins would eventually go back to the Federal Reserve and never circulate. You bought them, you immediately put them back in the bank. That is nuts.
Brilliant.
That's absolutely nuts. My frequent flyer scam was found out by the Mint.
A new scam like that. What else can we buy that's like that, that we can just put back and pay off the card?
Well, that's why I said there's an element of philosophy
that's
there. We've decided this has value, but it also has value, which is weird.
That's actually what I tell my students to do in regards to paying off tuition.
It only has instrumental value.
Pay your tuition, get
it doesn't
free
have any
ticket.
Intrinsic value. Money doesn't have any intrinsic value.
Why not?
In the same vein of that kind of logic, why do many people advocate replacing dollar bills with dollar coins in the United States?
Durability.
Durability, I think, is up there. Yeah, absolutely.
Save trees.
Save trees.
Less likely to get rejected by vending machines. I mean, how many times do you have to feed certain dollar bills in there before that?
Well, it does say, Professor Chow, it's commonly thought that the advantage is in the long life of a coin compared to a linen bill. But in fact, the much higher cost of producing a coin negates the advantage completely. It says here, people tend to collect and hoard coins more than bills, meaning the government gets the value of the coin from the user without the coin entering circulation. So, I mean, people are thinking hardcore about this stuff. Wow. That's all I have to say. We will continue to think hardcore about the 2 cents in our pockets from being professors. Professor Chow.
Yeah, sure. I'll rub a couple coins together.
Professor Finkenbein.
Take care.
Professor Evans.
Bye.
Professor Roach.
See you next time.
Professor Hokett.
Penny for your thoughts.
Professor Oljar.
Save your pennies.
Will do. And now these words.
Email your questions to atp@udmercy.edu. Or you may fax them to 313-993-1166. Attention, Ask the Professor.
Ask the Professor is transcribed at the facilities of the Briggs Building in the Department of Communication Studies in the College of Liberal Arts and Education at the University of Detroit Mercy's McNichols campus. Ask the Professor is produced by Adam Winbigler, technically directed by Michael Jason, and our executive producer is Dr. Vivian Dix. Until next week, I'm your host, Matt Mayo.